Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show so far, please tell future me via a review. And if you're really enjoying it, you can also join our Patreon, which has bonus episodes and extended versions of the current episodes as well. So if you want more of today's guest, for example, you can have that there. Our wonderful guest today is an acclaimed stand-up comedian, writer and actor who is a regular performer on the UK and international comedy circuits. Usually, hopefully that continues and the second lockdown doesn't scupper your hopes. She's written and performed 5 solo shows, which kind of blows my mind a little bit. But for me personally, I could listen to her impersonate her mother all day long. Or indeed, she has a voice for pretty much every one of her critics. So please welcome to the show, Jen Brister.
Thank you very much. What a lovely introduction. I very much enjoyed listening to that. Could have gone on longer, actually.
No, I'm kidding. Well, part of the reason I mentioned your impersonations of your mum is because the way she pronounces your name is like Yennefer.
Yeah, she calls me Yennefer. Yeah.
And I love
it. My brother is Stephen.
Yeah, yeah. So for context, your mother is Spanish?
Spanish.
And I love it so much because it's actually, she has convinced me that maybe your name should be Yennefer. I think
some of my friends call me Yen. Got a few of my friends who call me Yen. And I answer to Yen, actually. I answer to Yen.
She's got
Yen. I don't know.
I'm very open now. Yeah, exactly. What can I do? She christened me, so it's got to be something in it.
Yeah. And I think to start off, you've got a story of dating to share.
Yeah, I suppose I didn't do a lot of dating in my adolescence. That wasn't something that I did. But one of the dates that I can remember going on was when I was 13 years of age and a boy asked me out and I just felt obligated to say yes, even though I had absolutely no interest in him at all. But it just seemed to be something that everybody was doing. Bearing in mind, there was zero attraction. I mean, I was 13. I don't think I was interested in anyone really, but I definitely wasn't interested in him. He took me fishing. I don't know if that's something that you can imagine being romantic. So I sat on the bank of the River Thames and watched him drag his hand through a bucket full of maggots. And honestly, it was the most boring day I've ever been on. And then at one point he stood up and sort of leaned in for a kiss and I panicked and basically kind of punched him in the chest and he fell in the river. He was completely undeterred by that. He then took me to his house to pick up his tennis racket so I could watch him play tennis alone against a wall. So I don't know if anyone can beat that in terms of a horrific date, but I still to this day don't understand why I stood and watched him. I was just like, I think at one point I just got up and walked off and went, okay, bye. I just thought, this is my Saturday. This is interminable. I'm going to be at school in 2 days. I'm just watching you put your hand through some maggots, fall into a river and now watch you hiss a ball against a wall. Oh, God. So
I love that. Even at the age of 13, you were there thinking, I'm not getting this day back.
I thought, I'm never going to get this day back. I better get home in time for Metal Mickey. I was not happy about that at all. Let me tell you, that's a reference for anyone over the age of 40.
And my optimistic brain, you said fishing, and I naively thought of like a boat on a lake, and it's actually the Thames.
No, just the Thames. We didn't speak either. We didn't talk. I just sat next to him while he was fishing. And then I don't know what he thought a date was, but it was just, this is what I'm doing. Would you like to just come with me while I do this? And I was like, this isn't a date, mate. This is a horror show. Anyway, that was it. That's what I can remember.
Wow. It's an experience, all right. Although, to be fair, you know, you're going on a date at 13. Like, that's more mature than I was. I think I was just like feeling embarrassed about my body and I didn't want to go near anybody at 13.
To be honest with you, I don't think I wanted to go near him. I felt like there was pressure. An all girls school where I kind of probably knew at that age that I was not into boys. I felt like I ought to look like I was into boys. And that felt like the right thing to do. And then I could go to school on Monday and go, yeah, I went on a date. But I think I didn't tell anyone because I was so embarrassed that it was so awful. I went on a couple of those. I went on another date when I was like a year older. I went on 3 dates in my life with boys. That was the first one. The second one, I went to the cinema with a boy who was the same age as me, but he looked like he was about 9. And I was so embarrassed that I'm really sad to say this, but I walked out of the cinema halfway through the film because I just couldn't be seen with him. and he'd paid. And he even bought me some pick and mix. You can imagine the cost. Absolutely, what a meanie. And then when I was 15, I got taken to a McDonald's where the guy gave me vouchers and said, you can have a chicken sandwich and a lemonade. And that's what I had. He said, if you're lucky, you'll get fries. I never saw the fries. And then I got to watch him play Double Dragon, which is a computer game, in a kebab shop in New Malden. So listen, it's a triptych of horror, really, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah.
Those are the three only dates I went with boys, and all of them were awful.
Yeah, the male species really not selling ourselves there. And it sort of seems like, for whatever reason, they were all just being very kind of show-offy. They were just being like, here, watch me do a thing and you'll like me.
Oh, and also just talking about taekwondo, I just didn't care. I'm really good at taekwondo. Let me show you how good at taekwondo I am while I play Double Dragon in this kebab shop. I mean, come on, mate. Also, he had promised me a dinner date. We were supposed to be going out for dinner. He literally took me to McDonald's and then produced two vouchers and I wasn't allowed fries. I mean, tightwad or what? At least the other guy gave me some pick and mix.
And thus started your entire dates being graded on what you are fed.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to take me out, baby. But after that, it was very much Dutch.
And how were the initial dates then with women, by contrast?
Equally awful. I've went on some really awful dates with women as well. Some of them where you're just trapped in this conversation with somebody you don't know. Like, I suppose in the noughties, which was when I was dating, and I was in my mid-20s at this point, everything was done on gaydar girls, everything was done on the internet. I think now we accept that as being normal to date on the internet, but at the time it was like people really turned up their nose at them. You're on the internet, you must be desperate. I'm like, I'm not desperate, mate, I'm a lesbian and this is what we're doing, okay? So just, yeah, and fair play.
Some of them were.
Well, now it's just like everybody on the internet is angry and we're not entirely sure about what. It depends on the day and what's trending.
I definitely, it depends what the hashtag is going, that, you know, we'll just direct our anger at that. Yeah, I went on some awful dates. A lot of them were just where we were too polite with each other just to say, this is awful. We don't like each other. We've got nothing in common. Goodbye. You know? We just kind of hung
on. But I think there is that pressure, right? You've got to make something of it. And actually in doing so, you have a lot of mediocre dates where everyone goes away feeling a bit sad and useless.
Absolutely. And I think now, because internet dating has sort of been around for so much longer, I think people are a bit more savvy to it. So they go, oh, well, let's just meet for a coffee. I'm on my lunch break. Let's meet for coffee. And then they can easily say, oh, God, this isn't going to work out. Oh, I've got to go back to work, you know, whereas, you know, 15 years ago, whatever it was, 20 years ago now, we were just kind of like just trapped in a wine bar or something, in some les bar in Soho, looking at each other going, God, there's someone way more attractive behind you. How do I get out of this? Yeah. And I'm sure they felt the same about me. So, yeah. I mean, there were several occasions I know they did.
Wow. And do you feel like, in particular, that environment is, looking back on it, possibly the worst one? Because you're not used to being around groups of people where everybody is a potential partner for you. And then you're in an environment where it's all gay women. And then no wonder you're starting to see other options that aren't on your date with you.
Yeah, I think when you live in the closet, or even after you come out, your options are less than a lot of people, just from the very nature of you being gay. So I suppose when you're allowed into a space where the gender and orientation match, you know, it's a bit overwhelming to begin with. And also there feels like there's a lot more pressure that you should be able to make something of this. Because prior to this, your excuse was, well, I didn't know any lesbians, or I wasn't out. But now you're out, you're surrounded by women. Come on, you've got to make something of this. And actually, I found it really difficult to make connections with people or drum up the courage to even chat with someone. And everybody was always in a group. So if I was on my own, which often I was, because I didn't have many to begin with, friends who were lesbians, you know, you just feel like either some sort of sexual predator of like cruising around by yourself, or you just feel like a complete loser. You know, you're like, oh, God, I've got no mates. So, yeah, I did find it very difficult to navigate that kind of dating scene to begin with. And then when I started to make friends, which is what I used Gaydar Girls for primarily, rather than for dating, was to meet other women and you know, make a friendship group. Then it became not about going out and meeting someone. It became about, oh, I'm just going to go meet my mates. We're going to have a couple of beers. And that was the end of it. And then if you met someone, you met someone. More often you didn't, of course. And if you didn't, it didn't matter because you were having a nice time with your friends, which is what you want, you know, when you're single and young.
Yeah, well, it certainly makes it a lot easier, because I think that's part of the paradox, particularly with the dating apps and meeting, you know, essentially strangers. You know, you can lull yourself into this false sense of security by messaging them for a bit, but really you don't know who this person is.
That was the other thing that was really interesting, was to find that you had a real connection with someone and that they were really fun and they could be quite irreverent and silly online, and then meet them and for there to be nothing. Like no chemistry between you. Just like, it's like, but wait a second, what happened to all the bants that we've been doing over these weeks online? Which is why I got to the point where I'm not going to do this bants thing online. I'm just going to, let's meet. Let's not waste time. And equally, you can have quite an awkward conversation with someone and go, God, this isn't going anywhere. And then you meet them and then the chemistry's there. So it was very difficult to... It's not an exact science. I don't know if you've heard about this, but it's actually quite tricky.
It is messy. It's kind of messy by design. And I'm the same. I try and get on the date as soon as possible just to actually establish who are you really? Because I've had that same experience where I've met someone, they're very different when they're not on messages. And I walk away from it wondering, like, was it your flatmate that was messaging me? Like, I'm not even sure this was you.
Yeah, was this some sort of Cyrano de Bergerac thing where somebody else was doing it for you?
Yeah. You've got zero.
Or like a little committee behind the scenes.
Maybe, is there an app for this? Is there an app for good date chat that you logged up? Because you ain't got it in real life, mate.
I mean, is that the next step, that we'll just link up an AI to our Tinder and it'll talk for us?
I think we're like days away from that, honestly. And that's the terrifying thing, is that you can get somebody to do this shit for you. And then, you know, you finally meet them and you're like, I prefer, who, could you introduce me to that bot? Because I think I'd have a much better relationship with them. But yeah, dating is, I don't know. It's a tricky business, isn't it?
Yeah. And another thing you mentioned, which I feel is a real paradox, is that the fact that you have to pretend to be really relaxed and chill and easygoing in a situation which is by its nature very intense. You are both judging each other whether you could be together forever.
Or even for a night. Like often I would just get there and go, could I imagine any kind of scenario where we would even kiss or like be together, or be, is there anything in this where I'd even want to see you again? You know, like, you're right, your brain is just sort of breaking this person down, so you're often not even necessarily to begin with completely listening to them, because
you're in your own head.
Well, you're still taking them in, and this, you've made the stakes so high in your head, even if you know logically it's early days, you don't know this person yet, you still can't help but be like, so, you know, what would this person be like in 10 years? And then, exactly. But then you also have to pretend to be really relaxed and easygoing, because that's the way you come across good on a date. So we're both there pretending to be relaxed whilst deeply analysing the other's character.
Exactly. And you're not completely yourself. I mean, if people say, just be yourself. It's like, you be yourself. I mean, have you tried being yourself on a date? It's almost impossible. And there's always a part of you that's sort of part of your personality or your persona that kind of rises to the surface. You're like, and sometimes I'm like, oh no, not that bit of my personality, quash that, they don't seem to like that bit, bring up the other bit, bring those levels down, bring this level up, you know.
Today we're talking about one of our new obsessions. Stitch Fix is a way to get the personal stylist experience from home without the cost. They take the stress out of shopping by sending a selection of clothes picked to your style preferences. Then you are only charged for what you keep.
So how do they do it? Well, you simply fill out the online quiz to get started and you'll be automatically matched to one of their brilliant stylists. And we had so much fun with this, and we were intrigued actually by how detailed it was. Like, you're being asked questions about yourself. It's like fashion therapy. Do you like to wear, when do you wear this short leg belt, you know, flared trouser? Loved it. It made us, me, Bobby and I did it together the first one, and we were like, weren't we? I don't know, Bob, do I like yellow?
It is really interesting for getting you to self-reflect on your style and maybe put a bit more thought into it, or I guess in this case, let someone else. And then a week later, we each got a box and both of us kept a few items, and some of them not necessarily things we would have picked up on our own. You can join us in trying this great service at stitchfix.co.uk/dating, so they know we sent you. That's stitchfix.co.uk/dating. It really is a lot of fun and encourages you to try new things with your body. And Danielle doesn't know this. On a date, I wore the jeans that I kept recently.
And they fit like an absolute glove. So you wore them.
I did, yeah. Blue jeans are not normally part of my life, but now they are, and now apparently I go on dates wearing them, and the person is still keen to keep talking to me, so there's an endorsement for it. So give them a try. We're confident you won't regret it, and one day we'll get to go out and do in-person dates again, so you'll be ready. stitchfix.co.uk/dating.
My go-to is like just to be silly or to make jokes, and sometimes people are like, oh, that's a bit tired or a bit desperate, why don't you, can't you be yourself? And I'm like, this is me being myself, Jesus Christ, help me. So yeah, I don't miss those. Yeah, so I think the best part of the day is the bit before you meet. It's just the getting ready, the anticipation of meeting somebody can be the most fun, because at that point then you're projecting what you think the date might be, or who the person might be when you see them, and, you know, before the disappointment of meeting them or of them meeting you, actually. So, yeah, I always enjoyed that bit. And sometimes you can go on these cracking first dates and I would think, God, that just went so well. I mean, we really connected, we bonded, and then they would never contact me again. That was the other thing I never understood, was it seemed quite arbitrary as to whether or not, you know, people wanted to see me. And then I'd go on these dates that sometimes were absolute bloody car crash, where I got to the end of the day and I was like, well, that's an absolute disaster, we'll never see each other again. And then literally on the way home I get a text saying, had a lovely time, love to see you again. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That was like swimming through mud. I mean, I never want to go through that again. So you never know what's going on in another person's life. You never know. And sometimes people have all kinds of different reasons why they back out of a date, or why they decide that they don't want to see you again. But what I find the most frustrating in those instances is the lack of, I guess, honesty or transparency as to, I think it's absolutely okay to say, do you know what, I do really like you, this date went really well, but if I'm honest, my ex is still in the background and they contacted me and I still realise I have feelings, or whatever the bloody thing is. But when people just kind of just ghost you, that's, ghosting is terrible. And I say that as somebody, I mean, I have ghosted people, so I need to shut the fuck up. But that is a pretty awful way to treat someone, she said.
That's such a great point about being honest with people, that you've got to be, because it's confusing enough, the whole thing, without people pretending.
Yeah. And I think as I'm a bit older now, and I look at some of my behaviour in my 20s, which I think was pretty appalling. And also because I'd gone through my adolescence not going through a lot of the same, I guess, experiences and what's the word? You know, when people, they have certain particular stages in their lives. And as somebody that was quite closeted until my early 20s, I missed all of those. So when people were dating at university, I didn't do that. I didn't do that at school. And so when I got to about, I was in a relationship from the age of 23 to my late 20s, 26, 27. And then after, when I got out, I was in my late 20s, really, when I started dating. So I had like a 4-year period of dating, 27 to 31. And for somebody that was 27, I was really quite immature in my approach to being in, not even relationships, but dating. I just thought, well, we just do that. And then if that doesn't work, then we just stop seeing them and I go to the next person. Not really analysing my behaviour or how my behaviour might impact on somebody else, how it might make them feel. I know that sounds completely nuts given how old I was, but it was, I think, to cut myself a bit of slack, because I had beaten myself up about it a fair bit, is I just didn't have those, that formative period of adolescence. That I was in stasis that entire time. I was like trapped in amber, you know, so I wasn't doing all the things that everybody else was doing, like, you know, snogging boys or going on dates or having these relationships where you kind of make mistakes, so that by the time you get to your 20s, you're a bit more emotionally intelligent, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say, because I don't think I had that emotional intelligence when it came to dating.
Do you think you'd also got a bit kind of cold to it as well, that you'd sort of relied on your logic because the emotional side of it wasn't making as much sense at times?
Perhaps, yeah. I think if you have lived your life where you've shut down the particular side of your emotional self, not deliberately, but you haven't engaged with it because there's been no reason to, because, you know, if you're in the closet, you don't. I was in the closet, but I wasn't dating men. So I was just in the closet.
And did you have people questioning you at the time as to why you're not dating?
Oh, I mean, everybody knew I was a lesbian apart from me.
So I think
they just sort of let you figure it out.
They were just like,
Jen's going to figure it out eventually.
That's quite nice, in a way.
I don't think anybody was giving me a hard time. I came out as bisexual when I was 21, and I think there was a lot of eye rolling when that happened. And I think a couple of my friends did say, look, Jen, maybe just skip the boy thing and just do the girl thing for now. Be bisexual, but just don't date men. Just try women as a way of saying, I don't think the boy thing is for you. You're going to figure it out eventually. As soon as you get together with a girl, it will all make sense to you. And eventually that is what happened. I got together with a girl and I was like, oh my God, what was the... I'm not bisexual at all. I'm not even slightly bisexual. What is this?
Yeah.
That's the weird thing with people coming out as bisexual as a sort of stepping stone. Because it feels like a stage for, like, somehow a compromise. So that way certain people in your life get to still hold on to the idea that you'll settle down with somebody of the opposite gender, but you're also then opening the door to date the gender you're actually interested in. But the irony of it is not only does that create issues for actual bisexual people in terms of their identity being recognised, but also I don't know if it actually is easier for you because you're still not being your authentic self, but then you've got the additional layer of biphobia.
Yeah, I think in terms of, biphobia amongst straight people, I don't know if it's as prevalent as it is amongst gay people, lesbians and gay men. And that might be a surprise to some people, but biphobia is way more prevalent, I think, within the gay community than it is within straight circles. I'm talking about my own friendship groups.
I think it's also maybe a lot of it is quite normalised, like these ideas of bi people being greedy or them being like indecisive and they don't know what they want. You know, I think a lot of that is kind of subliminal as opposed to it being as direct, like homophobia can be very, you know, that's wrong, you shouldn't be doing that. Biphobia is maybe a little bit more nuanced and therefore more of it gets away with happening.
Yeah, I think biphobia isn't acknowledged as being a thing. And I think particularly amongst, oh God, I'm going to have to be really careful what I say here. I think it can be, not so much in the young generation. I don't think this is true at all. Okay, I'm talking about my generation, lesbians, and maybe older. Because the fight for lesbian rights has been so difficult and has, even amongst the LGBTQI, just to be visible has been a real battle. That I think some lesbians might think, well, you know, you're identifying as being part of the LGBTQI, but you are in a heterosexual relationship. So therefore, your bisexuality is invisible. And just because you want to carry that badge, we're the ones on the front line having to fight for our rights. You are able now, as somebody that's bisexual, to enjoy all of the rights that heterosexual people have. We're not. And so for that reason, you're not really part of this community. Now, I don't think that. My partner is bisexual or pansexual. I would say that she's probably more pan than bi, but I don't have that problem. But that certainly does exist. And I think it can be difficult for bisexual people to navigate their way through that. Fortunately, I think we're all of an understanding that sexuality comes in many shades. It's not binary. It's not like straight people and gay people. It's not like cisgender people and trans people. There's a whole breadth of shading that happens in between that. And that is the beauty of the LGBTQI communities, that we include all of those people. So I think it's exciting that this new generation of young people are so open about it and talking about it, and non-binary is becoming a new part of our language, being aware of our pronouns. That was not a thing when I was growing up. I mean, if somebody had said you have to identify as they, people have been, honestly, there would have not been a tolerance for that. Whereas now I think that's accepted that we can and should do that. So it's we're living in a different time, and I'm hoping that will continue, that kind of acceptance, and I don't like using the word tolerance because no one wants to be tolerated, but that kind of acceptance can continue. But I think when I came out, and my point is, I think when I came out as bisexual, I wasn't even aware of that biphobia?
Because for me, like, it was like a waiting room.
Yeah, it was. And deep down in my subconscious, I was like, you're a fucking lesbian. You know, I knew it. But it was just that thing of just having to just accept it and be okay with it and then say it out loud. All of these things are a journey.
Yeah, you're right. We are getting there. You know, it can feel very slow at times, this kind of progress. But you're right, we're getting there. And you've really well explained that. So I'm giving you some points.
Oh, great. I'd love points. What am I getting? Points make
prizes.
I love you're going to say no prizes, aren't you, Bobby?
No, there's prizes. No prizes. I love that you're really tailoring. It's like going to a pantomime where they have the jokes for every generation. You're really trying to speak to your people. So
it's only my people that are getting these references, by the way.
But you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that about biphobia, because it's something that I don't actually have a set sexuality label. I describe myself as dating people of all genders. And so my sort of figuring that out was a kind of going through the list of labels, realizing none of them quite fitted and then running out. But when it comes to discrimination, what you described of biphobia, I have received parts of that. And similarly to what you've said, I've received it more from gay people than I have from straight people. I had one ex in particular that tried having an argument with me about it at one point, and he was saying, do you think you'd love me more if I had a vagina?
Yeah, and
I hate to say it, but I probably laughed at the time, because it's just, A, it's such a funny, ridiculous thing to say, but B, it's sort of like, do you think I didn't know what I'm signing up for? Like, do you think I didn't realise you're a man? But, you know, this crazy thing. And so actually, another example of that, on my dating profiles, I put that as almost like a disclaimer. I say, I date people of all genders, so if that's a problem, swipe on. And people assume that I put that there for the straight people. But that's not where I've had the issue. There's no side of this that you can't face issues with, right? It tends to be more with straight people. It's a slightly fetishistic of like, oh, look at you, quirky, you also date men. Like, that's kind of what I get from women, and that's not necessarily much better.
No, neither of those sound good to me. I think we're really just at the beginning of this in terms of people understanding about pansexuality, and also understanding that some people don't use any label. I think we take such great comfort being put in a box and understanding where we sit within society, that to be floating out there in the ether, not being able to tick that particular box of where we belong, is unsettling for people and frightening for some people. And I think the fact that you're doing it is brilliant. And more people, I think, you know, my children's generation, and my kids are only six, I just don't think these are going to be conversations that they're having. I really hope not. Not unless we have some dreadful authoritarian move to the right in the next decade or so, which kind of does look like it's on the cards. But I hope that that's not the case, and that my children, these conversations won't even come up.
Well, that is the beginning of a movement I'm seeing, actually, is people who have always identified a certain way, including actually a few of the upcoming guests. In fact, I won't say upcoming because I don't know the order. That is a move, actually. I could see this as like, in fact, we'll leave that in because it's like weird behind the scenes production. Some of the other guests I've spoken to are in that place where they've always identified as something, like Eilish O'Carroll talks about identifying as lesbian. And now she's at a point where she's like, do you know what? I don't know if I can rule anything out. You know, she's like, I never thought I'd be gay, and I was wrong about that. So you never know, I might be attracted to a man one day if anything happens to my partner.
Yeah.
I think if everyone was really honest about their sexuality, there'd be a lot more people in between. And that's the truth of it, because I think we are crowbarred into these boxes and we sit in them, because over the course of my years, I've met enough men and women, particularly more women, who have been very honest with me. And obviously, because as a lesbian, they feel they can tell me this sort of stuff, that they're not 100% straight. That's how they identify, because it's easier to do that. But actually, they're not. And more people are being a bit more honest. I mean, there are people now coming out, I guess, is what we'd say, coming out now in their 40s and 50s as being bisexual or pansexual, or not feeling the need to identify as anything, but, you know, may have been in what a heterosexual relationship that ended, and now like I don't know if I would get back into another heterosexual relationship. That I loved that person for that amount of time, and now, you know, and I think that's great. I think a lot of people lie to themselves, and it's very difficult in certain communities and in certain countries to have that honesty. And I feel I'm very fortunate to have the family that I do, that the friends that I do, that the country that I live in, that I can be honest about who I am, because I feel like that's a huge privilege.
As a nation, we are back inside and online loads. One way I'm getting through it is watching Christmas TV early with the help of ExpressVPN. It lets you control where digital services think you're based. It's as simple as selecting a location and reopening Netflix, Disney Plus, or others to access otherwise unavailable content. For example, you can see Elf, one of my favourite Christmas movies, by switching to Australian Netflix. Plus, the service can work across your devices, so you can stream on a smart TV with the family or a laptop in bed without them.
Yeah, and all this happens whilst ExpressVPN is seamlessly encrypting your data to protect your privacy. So you can be confident digital ads aren't tracking you and websites aren't seeing you if you shopped at their competitor, which is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. You can join us on this safer and more global internet. Just go to expressvpn.com/dating to get an extra 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/dating. expressvpn.com/dating. That link is also in the episode description. It's such a slick service, and yes, it does kind of make me feel a bit like a spy on annual leave. Totally recommend it. Check it out. They support us. Please support them. And back to the episode. Yeah, and I think we're coming to the realization as a world that there is no easy answer. None of them are the easy option. All of it's a bit complicated. All of it's a bit more nuanced than we'd like it to be. You know, we'd like it to be simpler. And I can speak from experience, you know, whilst my way of identifying is the honest one for me, and not having a label is possibly the one way you get the most questions. It's not without people wanting answers and wanting clarification, but you know what, for me personally, I'd rather answer the questions and I'd rather talk about the nuance, because that feels more honest. And I think that's might link to something we're gonna talk about next, which is with these sexuality labels. I think part of it is that they need to constantly evolve. Even if you do identify with a fixed one, what that means changes. And I think more than ever, for example, we're seeing parenting in same-sex couples as a part of that identity in a way that historically we didn't. Do you feel that kind of change?
Yes, I think there was a point where if you were in a lesbian couple and you said, oh, I want to have children, people would have been like, how are you going to do that, love? I think you're missing the equipment. But now I think it's much more accepted. I mean, I still get those sort of questions, by the way, but I think it's much more accepted. And I think that once I was in the relationship that I'm in with my partner, we've been together nearly 15 years now, but we knew from the get-go that if we ended up together, that we would want to have children. And it was either going to be, you know, IVF or adoption. At no point did we go, but we can't because we're two women and society won't accept it. We must rethink. We just sort of thought, yeah, that of course we will. So I think people's expectations of what they can have changed. And perhaps there was a time where for some lesbian couples who were like, that just is going to cause too many problems for the kid, or, you know. But I think lesbian couples have been having children for a long time. They've just been doing it under the radar because lesbians' visibility has been very, within society, has been barely there. Certainly not within the media. It's not something that's been talked about, you know, gay parenting, lesbian parents. And so we've just assumed that they don't exist. But they've been there always. You know, Sarah and Daphne, very good friends, just bringing up a kid together, you know. So I feel like now it's accepted and more couples are having children. And it's just, I guess it's been as normalised as gay marriage, as part of, if you want that you can have it.
Yeah, which is so important in that visibility. You're so right, because I read a poll only last year from the States which asked gay identifying people what they thought about same-sex couples adopting, and incredible amount of them thought it was still illegal. But then maybe you would. If you've never seen it, you just assume it's not allowed.
Even when my partner was pregnant, wanted to read books that were of my experience as the other parent, as the other mother, and there wasn't anything. So that's why I wrote my book, was so that other same-sex couples or couples that were adopting or that weren't the biological mum could read it and have a companion and know that there's other people doing it and that they're not alone. And that helps to increase the visibility as well. And I talk about it on stage and obviously as a comedian. So there's a lot more high-profile people having children, you know, like famous actors and broadcasters and what have you, that normalised it as well, which has been great.
Right. And I think it's so important as well, because that part of it is very universal, that I would say every parent at some point, at least once, feels like they're the other, you know, that they're not fitting the societal expectations of what it is to be a good parent. And this idea that they're meant to have all the answers and know all the things, even though they're not prepared at all. You don't know what's going to come out or come home.
No, exactly. No. You completely nailed it. Yeah. There is an expectation that as a parent, you'll be perfect or you know what you're doing. And the reality is that you're just finding your way. And if you, good luck asking your parents, because they don't bloody remember anything. That's one of the things of being a parent, is you get immediate amnesia the second your children are over 10. You're like, oh, I don't remember. I think we fed them once, so they seem okay.
And do you think it's fair to say you got a particular baptism of fire because, as is common with IVF, you got twins?
Yes, I think that certainly is true. I think having twins definitely took us across the hot coals, so to speak. Yeah, the first 3 years were pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Horrific. But now that they're six now, and so they play really well together, and we felt quite lucky during the lockdown, rather, that they could play together and that they were of the same age and they're into similar things. So that made it so much easier for us, you know. Otherwise, you've got to play Lego. Do you want to do that? No one wants to do that, do they? So having two, that was a bonus. But yeah, the beginning bit was awful, hard work. But I love them. So, of course, I'd do it again, Bobby. I wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe not right now. Hypothetically, I'd do it again.
Oh god, let's say hypothetically. Yeah.
And have you managed to still find like fun and joy in your relationship with your partner, even with the distraction of two little people?
Yeah, I mean, you just find different things to bond with and connect over and find and share intimacy. And a lot of it obviously is with your children. But you do definitely have to work at setting time aside where it's just the two of you. And that is, and go on dates, actually. Go on dates with your partner to remember what it was like to have a conversation that isn't about your children, or to remember what it's like to go out and be with adults, you know. To remember who you were before the children as well, because I think you can lose a bit of yourself once the kids are born. Or you can feel like you've lost a bit of your identity. So I think trying to reinvent your relationship after children is an ongoing process, and it does require a lot of work. So we do try to do that. We're not always successful, but I think the fact that we're trying is a really good sign.
Absolutely. I think maybe that's the only version of parenting that I think can be seen as the ideal, is that you're trying your best and you're open to change and improvement, and you read a few books. And you do what you can, you know.
Yeah.
And there's wonderful books out there like yours.
Yeah, do buy it. The Other Mother by Jen Bristow. It's available in all good bookshops. Thank you very much.
So well rehearsed. So we'll start wrapping up there. The last thing we need to look at is the rules of the game. And oh, okay. I've got one inspired a little bit by something you said earlier in terms of it's important for people to be honest when they're coming away from a date, or even if it's something like a breakup, be honest about what the reasons are. But I think there's also a responsibility on the other side of us handling rejection and trying to keep that proportionate to reality as well, particularly with dating. If you've met this person once and they don't like you, that doesn't have to be earth-shattering. That doesn't have to be this big ego punch and you then need to go sleep with someone else to make up for it. You know, that's a whole dangerous path if you take it out of proportion. And instead, there's someone that doesn't know you very well, and they didn't like you, and it was probably more likely because they don't know you, or you're not what they thought, than it being some existential problem with your identity.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if that person isn't willing to invest time into you, then why on earth would you waste any time worrying about their opinion of you? Because it's based on very shallow soil, isn't it? So best to back away from that and move on to the next one.
Yeah, because they don't have to be. It is. They don't have to be that important. They're hopefully not related to you. They're not a friend. They're not a family member. So,
and hopefully, yep.
So you move on. And do you have one in mind for your rule of the game?
Oh, right. My rule.
Something dating or relationship wise that you try and live by.
Okay. So now that I have been in a relationship for, I guess it is a long time now, coming up to 15 years, I would say.
That is a long time. I can confirm.
Is that?
Okay, yeah, that's okay. Acceptable.
I think that the hardest thing to maintain within a relationship is good communication. And I know that sounds like a really obvious trope that everyone pulls out the bag and goes, must communicate. But I think it's very easy, particularly when you have children, to forget to talk to your partner about anything other than, oh, don't forget to pick the kids up at 3. Oh, and we've got to put the washing on. What are they having for dinner? Don't forget the swimming club tonight. Oh, what gig have you got on Saturday night? Can you do this? But, you know, all that kind of crap, is to really tap in and really communicate your feelings. And often we have built up resentment. Otherwise you get built up resentments, and there are things that can really feel quite toxic. If you don't regularly sort of check in with your partner, can be the undoing of your relationship. So I always think that don't sleep on a row. Try and communicate. If you've been a douche, apologize. There's a lot of rules here, but what I'm trying to say is the main one is just keep the lines of communication open, and don't get in a bloody mood for days, Brister. I mean, and you don't.
Humans.
That's what I meant. Humans. I'm talking to random. Nothing to do with me.
I love it. And I love the fact that you squeezed so many rules into one answer. So I think you get a point for that as well.
Oh, my God.
Okay, point.
I've lost count.
We've got at least two. I've counted two. Incredible.
All right. We'll wrap up there. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Bobby. I've very much enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.